Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Korach. Amazon.com, the shopping website, has a program that, at no cost to you, will enable Amazon to donate a small percentage of your orders to Pardes. You can sign up via smile.amazon.com and put in as your charity choice Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. Thereafter, if you make an Amazon order using smile.amazon.com, a small percentage of your order will be donated by Amazon to Pardes. Doing so does not increase the cost of your order, and it does help out Pardes. So please check it out if you use Amazon. This week, Korach with Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy. Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parshat Korach, and if you want my opinion, it is destined to be a blockbuster movie. The central narrative in our Parsha is a rebellion against Moshe's leadership, and it is taken down with pursuit and action. Fantastic movie, but it starts with a little bit of a boring verse. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi, v'tatchan v'avriram b'nei Eliav, v'on ben Pelet b'nei Reuven. Korach ben Yitzhar, the son of Kahat, the son of Levi, and Datan and Aviram, the sons of Eliav, and Om ben Pelet, the sons of Reuven, come together. And they get up before Moshe, v'anashim ivnei Yisrael, chamishim u'mataim nisiei heda, 250 leaders, korei mo'ed anshei shem, chieftains of the community, chosen in the assembly, men of repute. So all of these people get together and come to Moshe. Yikalu al Moshe v'al Aron v'yomru aleihem. Rav lachem, ki kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, u'betocham Adonai. U'madua titnasu al kahal Hashem. And they gather against Moshe and against Aaron, and they say to them, enough for you guys! All of the community, the entire assembly, all of them are holy. And God is amongst all of them. Why are you lording over them? Yishma Moshe v'yipala panav. Moshe hears this and he falls on his face. Moshe is under attack. Moshe, where do you get off telling other people what to do, putting yourself above the rest? Spoiler alert. Moshe, with a little help from God, smacks them down in style. Of course, I want to focus on a little curiosity in this very first verse, the boring one. The one where it seems like there are three rebels from the tribe of Reuven, Datan, Aviram, and On ben Pelet. Datan and Aviram are firmly put in their place. But On ben Pelet actually disappears from the scene and is never mentioned again. Where does On ben Pelet go? If you ask the Bible critics, they'll tell you that he never existed. He's nothing but a little typo. There were really only two rebels, Datan and Aviram. Both of them were the sons of Eliav, the sons of Pelet, the sons of Reuven. The Ramban suggests that he actually was just a supporting actor playing a secondary role, and that's why the Torah didn't bother with him afterwards. But if you want my opinion, those are boring answers. I'd like to share a Gemara, something you could make a movie out of, something with color, with fun. This is how it goes. It's from Sanhedrin 109, Kuftet Amubet. Amar Rav. On ben Pelet ishto hatzilto. What happened to On ben Pelet? His wife saved him. Amrale, my nafgalach mina. What are you going to get out of this? Imar Rabba, ant talmida. If Moshe is the master, you are the student. Imar Rabba, ant talmida. And if Korach becomes the leader or Datan becomes the leader, you are still the student. Amarle, ma'avid, havi be'etzav, ishtabele ba'adayu. On ben Pelet says, wow, you've got a good point there, but what am I supposed to do? I was there when we planned the rebellion, and I swore to join them. Amrle, yadana dekulhu kanishta kadishta ninhu. I know that everybody is, that the entire community is a holy community, citing the verse that said, Kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim. She understands it as follows, Dichtiv. Kol heida kulam kedoshim. Amra le tuv de ana matzilna. You sit and I'll take care of it. So Rav said, so this is where she moves forward. She's got a plan. She says, since they're all so holy, she has an idea. She gives him wine to drink, gets him drunk, and lays him on the bed inside their tent. And then she sat at the entrance of the tent and exposes her hair as though she were bathing. Anyone who came and saw her stepped back just according to her plan, knowing that they're so holy, she knew they would run from her when they saw her with her hair exposed as if she were taking a bath. In the meantime, the assembly of Korach was swallowed into the ground, and On, the son of Pelet, was spared. Eshet On sees her husband has made a bad choice. She is listening very carefully to their dinner table conversation. And her argument really is twofold. What, first, Datan and Aviram's claim is cynical. Their claim is an egalitarian claim. We're all holy. Why do you lord over us? They're speaking in the language of high morals. But what they mean is, let me be the lord. I want to be in charge. And once that's the case, the second part of the argument steps comes into play. Therefore, you don't stand to gain anything. Once the falseness of their claim is exposed, On doesn't have a chance. He isn't going to get anything out of the rebellion. It's clear to Mrs. On that given the choice between Moshe and Korach, they're definitely better off with Moshe. But she's a strategist, too. Given that she has exposed what's really at stake is male ego, On is stuck. How can he possibly have an honorable out? So she gets him drunk to protect him from himself. And then she exposes herself literally and figuratively to protect him from the rebels. How does she protect him from God and Moshe? The Midrash HaGadol fills that in as well. Amru, b'sha'ah she'chbiyato ishto, yashva la al petach upatcha ha'aretz et piha. They say that in the hour that his wife was hiding him, and she was sitting on at the entrance of the tent, the entrance of the land also opened its mouth, and it was seeking to swallow up On, who was lying on the bed. Amda ishto v'achza b'mita. This is where it becomes a good movie. Imagine the wind blowing strong. The wife stands up and she holds onto the corners of the bed and she says, Ribon ha'olamim, master of the universe. Kfar nishba b'shimcha gadol shelo yeh b'machloket le'olam. He's already sworn by your great name that he will never again be part of rebellion, be part of disagreement. Mashimcha chai v'kayam le'olam, just as your name lives and endures forever. Afim yichbor b'shvu'ah, ata yachol lipara mimenu. Even if he denies his vow, you can come back and punish him later. She challenges God with all the courage of Avraham. And tell me this isn't an amazing movie. Imagine fighting it out again, literally and figuratively with God. Physically, she's holding onto the edge of the bed. Figuratively, morally, she's arguing for the power of tshuva. God, you are a merciful God. You don't need to punish On. You can always come back and get him. With Moshe, she has to take a different tactic. L'charkan amrulo kumtze. Now she turns to On and she says, get up, go out. Amarla, mit bayeshani mi Moshe Rabbeinu. Are you crazy? I'm terribly embarrassed, afraid of Moshe Rabbeinu. Amarla, ani etzemcha. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'll go with you. Miyad, yatzave amda lifnei Moshe. Immediately, she gets up and she stands before Moshe. Barach Moshe mimena. And Moshe sees her hair still exposed. She looks crazy. He too is very holy and runs away from her. Kesha amda. But while she was standing there, she was also screaming and yelling and crying. As he runs away, he turns to his advisors. He says, Amar, mativa shel isha zo. What the heck is going on with this woman? Amrulo. Rabbeinu, zo ishto shel on. They say, teacher, this is the wife of On. Amralo, Rabbeinu, kach v'kach haya ma'aseh. She says to him, Moshe Rabbeinu, this is what happened. Let me explain it to you. Halachima leveta va'amad al petach. And he accompanies her, having heard the story, and stands at the opening of the tent. Kara la'on ben Pelet, say, and he calls to On ben Pelet and says, don't worry, come on out. Amarlo HaKadosh Baruch Hu yimcholecha. Surely God will forgive you. Yes, On has done tshuva, but pride is a big issue for men like him. Again, she takes the hit. She plays the crying, vulnerable woman, evokes Moshe's mercy so that he initiates with On and smooths things out with him. So she saves On again on two levels. She holds him from falling into the pit and she helps him to be his best self. Ah, I see the Emmys rolling in. But where does this crazy Gemara come from? Does this fanciful story have any anchor in the text? I don't know about you, but as a casual reader for many years, I found this parsha pretty confusing. There's a rebellion from the Levi'im, Korach and his buddies, and Datan and Aviram and On, three members of the tribe of Reuven, plus 250 leaders. The opening verse makes it sound like they've all come together in an attack of Moshe. But as the parrot continues, Moshe treats them as separate fronts. In verses 5 through 11, he turns to Korach, the Levite. It isn't enough that you guys are Levites. You also have to be Kohanim. They want Aaron's job. In verses 12 to 15, Moshe turns to Datan and Aviram, and as we said, not On, and counters the direct attack against Moshe's leadership. I have not taken the ass of any one of them, nor have I wronged any one of them. I'm a good king. After the ground comes from below and swallows up Korach, Datan, and Aviram in verse 32, there's still a remaining front to fight in verse 35, the fire that consumes from above the 250 leaders. Once you break it up like that, you can see that the story that's being told here is one that's very familiar to modern-day Israel, surrounded on all fronts. Take the case of Iran today, who's interested in heating up the resistance to Israel, both in Syria and in Gaza at the same time as Netanyahu is focusing on opposing the nuclear program in their home territory. They achieve a multi-front attack that the multiple resistance movements come simultaneously, and united, they pose an even larger challenge to Moshe than they would have had they come one at a time. But they're separate rebellions. They're sons of Reuven, who are after Moshe's job, and sons of Korach, who are after the high priesthood. Why these two separate fronts? Mrs. Owen has already explained to us why these folks are the ones leading the resistance. They're claiming to have egalitarian considerations, but it's no great surprise that the charges come from competing elites. Isn't Reuven justified in his bid to restore his rightful status as the firstborn? He deserves to be the head. And are not the Levites the natural next in line for the high priesthood? But Rashi makes an additional observation. Both Korach and Reuven are stationed in the southern flank of the encampment. Their physical proximity has given birth to a spiritual fellowship between them. They seem to have dragged one another into the rebellion. Having slipped into the wrong crowd, they bring out the worst in each other. As the Gemara states, Oy la Rasha, oy la Shecheino. Woe to the wicked, woe to his neighbor. So just as Eshet On Ben Pelet brings On up and brings the best out in him, so too Korach, Datan, Va'aviram bring the worst out of each other. They bring each other down. Rashi's textual observation becomes a moral assertion that we're deeply influenced by our peers and surroundings, that we ought to be careful with whom we make company out of fear of being dragged down. And it's this assertion that can help us understand why Eshet On is credited with saving On. Along the way, it also helps us to explain another related anomaly in the text. In verses 26 and 27, Moshe prepares to bring divine wrath down on the rebels. Given our guiding principle, Oy la Rasha, Oy la Shecheino, woe to the neighbors, it is not surprising that he opens up by commanding that Israel distance themselves from the rebels. Moshe addressed the community saying, Move away from the tents of these wicked men and touch nothing that belongs to them, lest you be wiped out for all of their sins. So the people withdrew from the abodes of Korach, Datan, Vaviram. But what the details of what happens next is really worthy of your attention. Datan va'aviram yatsu nitzivim petach oalehem unasheihem ubaneihem v'tapam. Now Datan and Aviram have come out, and they stood at the entrance of their tents with their wives, their children, and their little ones. And you see the same again in verse 32. V'tivtach ha'aretz et piha v'tivla utam v'et bateihem v'et kol adam asher lekorach v'et kol harachush. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households, all of their people, and all of their possessions. If Korach and Datan and Aviram had sinned, what justice is there in punishing their families? Does Oy la Rasha, Oy la Shecheino mean woe to the wicked and woe to those who are associated with them? They've just been caught in the crossfire. The flip side of Reuven and Korach bringing each other down through their proximity is also the potential and even the responsibility of their neighbors to positively impact an at-risk population. So what's the Eshet Korach and all of their house, perhaps, are not just caught in the crossfire. Perhaps they're also caught in a matter of collective responsibility. Mrs. Own stood to be caught up in the destruction. So her work to save her husband is also an attempt to save herself. But the matter isn't just one of collective punishment. It's not just a matter of being caught in the crossfire. It's also a matter of collective responsibility. I'm immediately reminded of a Gemara in Shabbat. There, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, the rabbis articulate a halacha that a calf or a cant can't go out with a strap between their horns on Shabbat. And then they complain, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah's cow used to go out with a thong between his horns without the consent of the rabbis. The rabbis were annoyed about it. The Gemara immediately chimes in. It was taught. It wasn't actually his cow, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah's. Rather, it was his Shechina, his neighbor. And yet, because he didn't stop his neighbor, protest what she was doing, it was designated as his. He took the blame. Oy la Rasha, oy la Shecheino. Woe to the wicked person, woe to their neighbor. That's not cited in the Gemara. Those are my words here. Rav and Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chaviva taught the following. Whoever can forbid his household to commit a sin but does not is seized for the sins of his whole household. If he can forbid his fellow citizens, he's seized for the sins of his fellow citizens. If he could have stopped the whole world, he's held culpable for the sins of the entire world. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is caught in the reputation of his neighbor, because just as the sons of Reuven and the sons of Korach brought each other down, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had the ability to bring his neighbor up, as Eshet ben On ben Pelet did. Friends don't let friends drive drunk, and if they do, they share in the guilt of the tragedies that ensue. If you could have stopped an evil from occurring, and you don't, you share in the culpability. It is not so much a matter of collective punishment as it is collective responsibility and collective faith. Fate, the people we associate with are destined to influence us. And conversely, we're obligated to try to influence them for the better. This notion of common responsibility is a motif that repeats itself again and again in the Torah. You're probably familiar with the principle, Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Lazeh, all of Israel is responsible one for the other. Avraham is chosen not just because he will do justice and righteousness, but because he will command his children and his household to do so. Leman asher yitzaveh et banav ve'et beito acharav v'shamru derech Hashem lasot tzedakah u'mishpat. Similarly, Moshe is chosen because he makes a habit of sticking his nose in everyone's business, first by punishing the slave master, then by intervening in the fight between Jews, and finally by saving Zipporah from the shepherds. Neighbors have the opportunity and therefore the responsibility to influence one another for the good. So if they don't, oy la Russia. Oy l'shcheinu, woe to the wicked person, woe to his neighbor. Having said all of this, we won't be surprised to hear about the role ascribed to Eshet Korach in the continuation of the same Gemara. Korach's wife said to him, "See what Moshe's doing? He's the king. He appointed his brother high priest, and he anointed his brother's sons deputy priests. If Truma comes, he says, 'Let it be for the priests.' If the first tithe comes, which you as the Levites take, he says, 'Give one-tenth to the priest.' And furthermore, he shears your hair and waves you as if you were insignificant as a piece of poop. As though he sets his sights on your hair and wishes you to be shaven and unsightly." Korach said to her, "But didn't he also shave his head, like the rest of the Levites?" She said to him, "Since it is all done for his own prominence, he thinks to himself, 'Let me die with the Plishtim.' He's willing to humiliate himself in order to humiliate you." Mrs. Korach didn't stop there. The tirade continues, and this is the part that especially interests me. She said to him, "And furthermore, with regard to that which he said to you, to prepare tchelet for your tzitzit, one could respond to him, 'If it enters into your mind, Moshe, that using tchelet dye is considered a mitzvah, take out robes that are made entirely of material covered with tchelet and dress all the students of your assembly in tchelet robes without tzitziot.'" Why could one not fulfill the mitzvah in that manner? Clearly, Moshe is fabricating all of this. Oy l'resha, oy l'shcheino. Korach and his wife bring each other down. One possible response to oy l'resha, oy l'shcheino is to try to influence for the good. But another argument could also be made. Be careful who you hang out with. Choose your neighbors carefully. Rashi famously explains that holiness means separateness, kedoshim to you, prushim to you. This, I believe, returns us to the story as a whole. And while I've already shown that the rebels make the claim cynically, perhaps their power is in the fact that there's something worthy of consideration in their words. I remind you that they said, to Moshe and Aaron, "You have gone too far, for all of the community are holy, all of them, and the Lord is in their midst. Why then do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation?" Is there something to the claim of Eshet Korach about the tzitzit? Why have one string of Tehillet, which is holier than all of the others? Why not have everything be blue? Similarly, why set the Kohanim apart? Why aren't we all a priestly people? And from there, perhaps it isn't too far to ask, why should the Jews be a people set apart? Am levadai yishkon. Why shouldn't we be a part of the world as a whole, bringing the riches of the Torah directly to everyone? Does this separatism and holiness not increase the danger to the at-risk populations, who are then as if abandoned in an attempt to protect from a contagious disease? When does this give us the opportunity to take responsibility for each other and influence one another for the good? And when does being in the midst of everybody put us at risk of being corrupted? Oy le Russia, oy le Shechina. I encourage you to talk about this at your Shabbat table. I'll just share one explanation that's inspired me, that of Martin Buber. He says, you shall be holy. He cites the verse, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And he adds, just as God is both separate from the world and also involved in it, so too we should be both separate and involved in the world. Separation may be a necessity in order to create holiness, but it can never be an end in itself. It must always turn toward a larger involvement in the world as a whole. As it says in the Gemara we cited above, whoever can influence the world as a whole and does not is held responsible for the wrongs of the world. So to summarize, this week's Parsha is a great film with a complex part, and a plot, an adventure in which Moshe fights on multiple fronts. It's made an even better movie with the help of a really fun Gemara, introducing the unsung heroine, Eshet On Ben Pelet, who coins the expression, friends don't let friends drive drunk, who understands the cynical nature of the rebels' claim for universal holiness and serves as an ideal of what it means to take responsibility for our community and those in it. She is a foil to the other sons of Reuven and Korach, as well as Eshet Korach, who influence each other negatively, modeling the expression, oy le Russia, oy le Shechino, woe to the wicked person and woe to his neighbor. Finally, given this mutual responsibility, we entertained the problematics of separatism and suggested that when separatism is a necessity, it must always be accompanied by involvement in the world at large. May this Torah be an opportunity for us to explore the ways in that we influence and are influenced by our community, and may we be blessed to be an influence for the good. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hammer Kassoy. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.